Mr. Sherlaw, Reel 4. Now, since our last meeting, you want to correct a couple of things after having looked up in your correspondence from the time. If you'd like to fill us in with some dates.
First of all, as conscripted in February 1940 into the Royal Army Pay Corps, billeted at Ashford in Middlesex, and was with them until the 31st of December 1940, and during the last 2 months at Curzon Street in London. On January the 1st, I went to the DLI depot at Branstow, and was there until the 12th of August 1941. During the last six weeks, I acted as an unpaid lance corporal. Mid-August 1941, I transferred to the 14th Battalion, the Durham Light Infantry, stationed at Folkestone, Shorncliffe Barracks, and variously at Sandgate and places along the south coast. On the 8th of October 1941, I was promoted to corporal, which rank I kept until the 28th of August 1942, when I went to Octu. What's with the 14th Battalion? From the 8th of July to the 20th of August 1942, we were stationed at Gillingham near Gravesend, but returned to Folkestone before going to Octu. On the 30th of August, I arrived at 163 Octu, stationed at Isham Towers in Morecambe, and was there for 15 weeks until mid-December 42. Was commissioned on the 12th of December 1942. When I, and a week later, transferred to the 14th DLI, Benton in Devon. Well, that's as far as I go, I think.
Yes, that's right. Well, that.
Now, we can carry on from there, can we?
We can. So, what happened? What type of training were you doing with your men at Paignton?
Generally, one or two little bits of landing training at the on the coast. But more
what type of thing?
Exercises in the surrounding countryside.
Well, let's take the landing first. What sort of landing training were you doing?
I'm trying to remember whether we had landing craft or not. The main landing craft training I did was in North Africa. I don't think we had them down at but we did go onto the coast and practice the sort of thing which we might have to do if we were landed on the beach, that sort of thing. Not very enterprising. Most of the training was concerned with keeping us fit, keeping us abreast of weapons and things like that. I don't think very much else, to be honest. We were only there at Paignton for 3 or 4 weeks or so, 3 weeks. 3 weeks, so we hadn't time to do very much.
And then where did you go then?
I never quite sure why we, you know, went down there for that short time. And we came back from Paignton to Hornsey in East Yorkshire. I got there at the beginning of January, and we were there until the 10th of March, 1943.
And what were you doing there?
In that period, we were doing all sorts of specialised training. At the time, I was commanding the mortar platoon. And so we did a lot of training in mortars, using motorbikes, things like that.
Which mortar were you using?
Two-inch mortar. The infantry mortar. Two-inch mortar.
What did you think of it as a weapon at that time in while you were training?
I'm not right about that, you know. We used a two-inch mortar with the rifle platoons that we were using, three. It was a bigger mortar anyway. I think it would be 3-inch mortar probably.
And what did you think of it?
It wasn't a bad weapon actually, it was a useful weapon. The only trouble with those things of course is that the 2-inch you could cart around, which is fairly light. The bigger mortars, you needed to have transport for them. So we always needed to have carriers or something of that sort. Carriers were very useful, and we did a lot in carriers.
Bren gun carriers.
But both with the mortars and with Bren guns, of course. But I wasn't with the carrier platoon as such. My platoon was going to play mortar.
And what was your role? Did you have a special role in the battalion, especially
It's essentially a support role. In fact, in action, I never, ever used a mortar platoon.
But why?
The sort of support which it gave us, we were able to get from the Royal Artillery. Always. We nearly always had artillery support of some kind, and so a mortar platoon with light mortars was not terribly effective.
Right, so you were training there until anything else about Wiley would Hornsey?
Did a lot of battle course training, but that training was external to the battalion because we went to battle courses run outside of the battalion, divisionally or whatever.
And what sort of new tactics were you learning there?
I don't know that we were learning any new tactics. We were merely being put through a lot of physical effort. You know, things like jumping off high walls and climbing ropes and getting across and things. But tactics? No. I mean, the stage at which we learnt any tactics at all, really, was in largely in seminar. And then the only time we got a chance to put them into action was in exercises. So we did a lot of what you might call tactical training at Cockatoo. When you get down to, you know, the NCOs and lower ranks, they did a certain amount of in-class training. And then we got the chance to put it into practice. Probably once in 2 or 3 weeks as an exercise. All platoons did a lot part of what you might call running around the countryside. And to some extent, this was a way of getting to know how to use ground and cover. And perhaps occasionally we got a chance to set out sections and so on in imaginary defensive positions and things like that. But one certainly got an impression that most of the training was concerned with developing the physical side of everybody.
Now, the 14th, as we mentioned before when you were with them, was a training, a sort of feeder battalion. How did you officers feel about that? I mean, you mentioned before the colonel always wanted...
I think the majority of officers were quite resigned to the idea that they would leave the 14th. I think they knew very well that there was no question that we were going to be a fighting battalion on our own. I know initially when you join a battalion like that, you do hope that you're going to stick together. And there's certainly a better spirit in any battalion that's going to stick together. But, but we knew that our main task at the time was to defend the coast. And we knew that any sort of build up for an invasion was a long way off. So that we were quite happy in a way to accept the idea of defending the coast and hope that perhaps we'd get a little bit more fun if we were posted to another battalion.
So where did you go to in March?
We went to Hornsey from Pym in January, beginning of January. And we stayed there until the 10th of May. And at the 10th of May, I was drafted with my friends to North Africa.
Now, were you given any advice as to what to take to kit out, especially for North Africa?
We were kitted out for hard time.
What did that involve?
There's an interesting story about how I came to be sent to on that particular drive. When the draft was made up, I wasn't on it. And my friends were going on it, the officers I was pretty friendly with, saw the colonel and said, could I go on it too? And he said, no, he said, I want to keep you with the most platoon here. A couple of days later, I was riding a motorbike down the street of Hornsey and drove it through a tobacconist's window. And how
did you manage that?
I was a bit too hard on the corner. And I wasn't particularly hurt, but I didn't do the motorbike any good. We went to a football match in Hull that afternoon, and as I was coming up, the colonel tapped and he said, by the way, Ronald, he said, you can go on that draft. So I put on the draft. And we went straight to North Africa, to Bleeder, near Algiers.
Now, you were telling me the kitting out. How were you kitted out? Did you have to buy any special equipment?
I can't remember where we went to be kitted out. We got it just before we got on the boat. I'm blown if I remember where.
No matter. What did you get any embarkation leave?
Yes. I suppose that was that 14 days. And I went home. And I got married. And the day I was married, I got a note saying, come back. So I was away 4 days. I had 4 days in my embarkation leave.
Did that upset you, having to go back so soon?
No, I don't think so. I was disappointed that I didn't get my full embarkation leave. I was disappointed that I'd actually about 3 or 4 days of married life before I went abroad. That was certainly...
Did the fact you were going abroad make any difference to your decision to get married?
I hadn't made the decision to get married until I was put on embarkation leave. We had made the decision to get married, but not an immediate decision. So when I went back home on embarkation leave, I said, shall we get married now before I go off, before I go abroad? And we decided we would. What it really did was to expedite marriage.
Now, what about the trip out? What was it? What ship did you go out on? Do you remember?
The big Dutch ship. I should remember the name.
All right. What were conditions like for you, officer?
Very good. By and large, very good. Of course, like all, it was very crowded. We slept below on hammocks. But the food was exceptional. We even had Javanese waiters, serving food and things like that. What was going in that ship? The big.
Well, did you have a large draft of men? How many were there on the draft with you?
Well, the draft that came from the 14th. About 40 or 50 altogether. But of course, there were drafts from other, I suppose, on the ship itself, 700.
Right, no events on the voyage, then?
We had one or two false alarms, but we had nothing new.
And what about your arrival in Bleeder?
Well, we arrived first of all in Algiers, where we went into a transit camp, and where I think something like 50% of the people had dysentery. I was one of them too, and that wasn't very pleasant. We had to crawl about 400 or 500 yards to the dreams. But we got over that and went up to the joined the battalion leader.
That's where they were.
Probably about 17th or 18th of May. And we had a good reception. The colonel, a superb bloke called Johnny Preston, Colonel J.C. Preston. And worthiness, and I was sent to C Company, and my company commander was called George Joby.
Your company commander was Joby. What was he like, George Joby?
George had already been fighting in the line in North Africa, Sedgenane and places like that. He was a very human character, was George. He changed swift. He's the only company commander I ever knew who would be so desperate for cigarettes he would get down the trench under a gas can. But he, nevertheless, he was very good to us. A little bit indecisive, but he was fully wrapped up in his history, and that sort of thing. He didn't want to think about or do anything else but going up archaeological digs and at the George.
What about the other
officers?
What about the other officers? Mm-hmm. What about the other officers?
There was one other whom you've already seen, Jerry Barnard, who came to the Italian with me. And he came to the same company that I did. And the one who was already there, called Casey, Pat Casey, who's now dead, I'm afraid, an Irishman who, by training, was a chemist. Was a bit of a wild character. But again, chap I got on very well. Lived in Jarrow. he had seen a bit of action already, and a bit more experience than the other officers in the company. And I'm trying to remember who the sergeant major was, a chap called Mattin, M-A-T-T-I-N. He was a regular soldier, and a bit of a hard nut.
Any of the other NCOs you remember? You'd have a platoon, wouldn't you?
Yes. I don't even remember who at a particular time in that 2000, but I should.
How did you fit in with your platoon? I mean, you'd had a platoon before in England, but these men had actually been fighting.
Some of them.
Some of them, yes. I mean, did you feel a little in awe of them as you took over? Or?
Oh, yes. I think that's the first thing you do feel when you come dry into a fighting regiment, is that there are people there who know a bit more about the game than you do, and I certainly had to rely considerably on my sergeant and even in some of the other NCOs. But I got an early start there, in a way, because I think I'd only been there a week when the colonel said to me, "I want you to go on a rock climbing course." And I was sent off the Atlas Mountains and did about a week or 10 days, learning how to climb cliffs and abseil down them and all that sort of thing. And when I got back and I told him about the course, he said, "All right, well, I want you to take some platoons out there and teach them." So I spent the first few weeks with platoons in the Atlas Mountains doing rock climbing, that sort of thing, which was quite good for me because, I had nobody to interfere with me. I was on my own, and I was in a chat very well.
Were most people all right with heights?
Yes, I've always been all right with that. I did a little bit before the war. Not rock climbing as such, but I did an awful lot of walking and things in the Lake District. So I've been a little bit. But I've never been worried about heights very much.
So the battalion was just based at Bleeder during the whole of this period?
This period, and yes. I have a thing for that. Until the middle of August. Yeah. But the middle of August, and we were at Bleeder. And then we went, and during that period, we did quite a bit of landing craft exercises on the coast.
Now, this is where you did actually get the landing craft. What were you doing? What were the nature of the exercises?
We get into a landing craft, push off into the sea, and then be taken back into the land and have to jump out into the sea and run it without guns and pretend that somebody's going to shoot us and sort of thing.
Anything else?
No, I don't think so. I don't think that any other. We managed to do with the swimming and so on, which was all a good practice. And as I say, we went from there up to Bizerta. And that was where we did the final practices and runs, both in Leningrad and so on, before we went to Salerno.
Now, what equipment did your platoon have then? I mean, as a platoon?
Well,
it was a rifle platoon, was it?
Oh, yeah, it was a rifle platoon, yes. So they had ordinary Enfield rifles and bayonets. The section leaders all had Tommy guns. The headquarters section of each platoon had an anti-tank rifle and two inch mortar. And each section had a Bren gun. So that was three Bren guns, an anti-tank rifle, two inch mortar. And everybody else had three or four Tommy guns, it would be. The sergeant, I think, had a Tommy gun as well. Platoon sergeant.
What would you have?
And if you could get a hold of a Tommy gun, the company, the platoon commander had one too.
Did you get one?
Most often, yes.
And what transport would your platoon platoon have? At that stage, you know.
We had a 1500 weight truck, which carried the heavy stuff, the packs and so on. But that, of course, stayed back in normal times. That stayed back at Biesson and came up with packs, rations, anything for the platoon. And it wasn't, to some extent, although there was one allocated, it wasn't recognised as a platoon truck. It was always company transport.
So what would you have in your platoon? Would you have any carriers at all? Or so you were just on foot?
Just on foot.
Now, so at Bizerta you were doing your final training. Anything else special?
I think, the final training before Salerno was more concerned with telling us exactly what the battle was all about and where everybody else would go and what would be supported. And, and I suppose giving us the right sort of frame of mind for